From the day my guest John Haynes set foot in Alaska, he said he knew he was home. It was just after World War II, and as Haynes would write later, something in me identified with that landscape. I had come, let's say, to the dream place. Haynes is one of Alaska's best known and most acclaimed writers. His poems and essays about living off the land and the Alaskan wilderness have won the praise of other nature writers such as Barry Lopez, who says that Haynes has kept a vigil on the frontier where most of us, I suspect, would have finally run out of patience, done in by the loneliness. When Haynes built his cabin in Richardson, 60 miles from Fairbanks, he had to hunt moose to keep from going hungry. But now he has a good car and can drive 30 miles to the grocery. For the past few years, he's only lived in his cabin part-time. Haynes has written a memoir called The Stars, the Snow, the Fire. I asked him to read an excerpt.
The wilderness is open, and whoever enters it knows the satisfaction of being at ease in a country he calls his own. The land belongs to him and to no one else. He can go where he likes, following his own trail through the spruce bogs and across the dry birch hills, a pathway tramped in the snow, to stop at nightfall in his own snug camp.
What first brought you to Alaska?
The end of World War II, in part, the fact that I was at loose end, so to speak, and out of the Navy, and the Alaska Highway had just opened up to civilian travel, and there was a lot of news in the papers about people going north to Homestead. And I might not have done it at that particular time if it had not been for the fact that as a friend of mine had discussed going up there with someone else, and they asked me to join them. And everything sort of led from that. And long before that, I had, as a boy, an urge to go into the woods someplace and make a home. I didn't connect it with Alaska, but that's the way it turned out to be.
Well, you did homestead, and you built a cabin in Richardson, Alaska. What did it take to homestead, to get the land that you built the cabin on?
Well, in those days, Alaska was not a state, as you may know. It was a territory. And most of the land here was federally owned, and it meant that you could go almost anywhere, anywhere outside of a town, as long as it was not an Indian reservation, and take up a piece of land and live on it. Any amount of land, for one reason or another, could be obtained that way, and I just found a piece that I liked, as I said, near Richardson, and filed on it and got patent for it some years later.
It seems to me that there's at least two things that have attracted you to Alaska. One is the sense of living on the frontier, but the other is the solitude that it affords. What is it in you that needs that kind of solitude?
Well, I've always had an ambivalent attitude toward solitude, on the one hand needing it for certain reasons, and on the other not feeling entirely comfortable with it. I mean, I have a gregarious side to me. I enjoy people. But I think the fundamental solitude was necessary in order for me to learn certain things that I could not have learned any other way. And as I said in one of the essays in The Stars, the Snow, the Fire, that there's just something about a certain kind of life that you can only learn by plunging into it and killing animals and dealing in blood and things of that sort. And there's no other way to do it. You can't do it by sitting in an office somewhere and imagining it.
What are some of the things you think you've learned by living alone in the wilderness and having to hunt for your own food?
Well, I think I learned something essential about living in a certain place. I think that this was a very good lesson for me, and I've tried to explain that in essays here and there, that something essential in human life is approached in that way. And anybody who farms and plants and tends animals will understand what I mean. It's a life that goes back to a very early time in human history. And I think periodically some of us at least, and perhaps humanity itself, needs to return some distance in that direction and to relearn these lessons. And certainly individually, some of us are, for one reason or another, led to do that, and that's essentially what it was about.
Do you ever lose track of the days?
Nope. Yes. Yes, I lose track of a lot of things, but not usually the days, no. I don't listen to the radio. I get enough bad news from the newspapers, and but I have, you know, I pay attention to that. Yeah.
You said that you were born as a poet in Alaska, that you started writing poetry while living there. How did you start writing in Alaska?
I started writing, I say seriously, the first winter I spent at the cabin in Richardson. And the reason I started writing is rather mysterious, but I had been studying art, painting and sculpture back east before I came to Alaska. And I assumed that when winter shut down that I would get my paints out and set up easel and canvas and paint. And I discovered I wasn't going to be able to do that for any number of reasons, lack of light. But I needed some way of responding to the experience, you see. And so I began writing. I didn't know quite what I was writing or what I was going to do with it, but I knew enough about poetry, for example. And that's how it started. I had to get something down. I had to find some way to express my feeling about things and my reaction to the country and simply being there.
Can I ask you to read a short poem for us of yours?
Yeah, I will do that. And I'll read something out of the first book, Winter News, and it just is a brief, I would say, a description or a presentation of a certain mood in inside the house and at the end of a day, and in the fall, obviously, and winter is coming on, and there's a certain quietness into things, and certain things have been done and accomplished, and you have a sense of the year drawing toward an end. And it's a kind of dying away of things. The leaves have fallen, winter is coming on, and you have this sense of a certain finality. And that's mainly what's in the poem. Listening in October. In the quiet house, a lamp is burning, but the book of autumn lies open on a table. There is tea with milk in heavy mugs, brown raisin cake, and thoughts that stir the heart with the promises of death. We sit without words, gazing past the limit of fire into the towering darkness. There are silences so deep, you can hear the journeys of the soul, enormous footsteps downward in a breezing earth.
In a previous book of yours, you mentioned that to find a literature of the North, you had to look to the literature of other countries because the far north really hasn't been part of the American consciousness.
Right. I would say that. Yeah.
Do you think that writers such as yourself now living in Alaska will change that in some way?
Well, I think that I have, to some extent, initiated something of that sort. I suppose I could claim that some of my poems, not all, because I've written poems about many, many other things, but at least the first poem that I published in book form did present something new, and it has been called the first serious poems of the far north in American literature, and maybe that's true and maybe it isn't, but I think it's a fair guess. Other people have been since writing and adding to it in some way, but as I say, I think this is, we're still very much at the beginning of what I would call a serious literature from this part of the world.
Frontiers, especially last frontiers like Alaska, become very symbolic in a lot of people's minds. And to some people who go there, they're seeking some transformation that they can't find where they are. They're kind of at the place of last resort. And I think I've run into a lot of drifters and losers who think that their fate's going to change when they get there, when they get to Alaska. And I wonder if you've run into a lot of people like that yourself.
Yeah, I'd say that there were quite a few dead-enders here in Alaska, as you find them elsewhere, but it's the illusion of, you know, the last place to go. And, I mean, the last frontier is a cliché in a sense, and in another sense, it's a very real thing. But, Yeah, it attracts all kinds of people, good and not so good. But for one reason or another, I think people come here often. They do find something of themselves, if nothing else. But it is a place where you you tend to meet up with certain things in yourself, or simply in the world around you that are not always easy to face, to understand, and to make sense of, and make some good use of.
Okay. I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you for your patience, and I hope I've said something worth listening to.